This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Interact for Health began releasing results of the 2017 Greater Cincinnati Community Health Status Survey last month. The survey has been conducted every few years since 1999, most recently in 2013. It's the largest, most comprehensive health survey of our region, with thousands of interviews in 22 counties. And joining us to talk about the community health survey results announced so far are Interact for Health President and Chief Executive Officer Dr. Odell Owens and Research Officer Susan Sprigg. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Susan and Odell, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for the invite.
It's nice to be here.
Would you start by telling us what Interact for Health is? Give us a little background on your organization.
Interact for Health, at one time, was called the Health Foundation. And Interact for Health was formed when Choice Care, which was a physician-owned HMO, was bought by Humana. And in that process, when you do that, usually there's some money generated instead of paying taxes that are usually put into a foundation. So a foundation was formed with about $250 million at that time. And the real purpose was to start more with access. At that time, the main problem was getting people to a place where they could get health care. With the Affordable Health Care Act passed, that sort of eliminated that, and Interact for Health went more to health promotions and these kind of releases.
Mm-hmm. What's the purpose behind the survey?
Well, for us, it's all about education. You know, we want to gather information. We want to compare our region, our city, our neighborhoods with other neighborhoods. We certainly, our goal in Interact for Health is try to be the healthiest region in the country. In order to do that, you got to know where you're starting from. So by putting out this data, then wonderful people like you will interview us. Your audience will hear some data, and hopefully that will cause some action.
Susan, talk about how the survey is conducted.
Sure. This is we take a random sample of adults, like you said, in a 22-county region surrounding Greater Cincinnati. So we've got a little bit of northern Kentucky, a little bit of Indiana, a little bit of southwest Ohio. And we ask them questions by telephone about their health status, their health behaviors, and their health outcomes.
So how many different areas does the survey look into? How many different issues do you look at when you do a survey?
Topics. Mm-hmm. We have about 10 to 15 topics this year that we'll be releasing. It depends on the year. There are some we do from year to year. So smoking, we have asked every year since 1999. Then we have a new one this year. We'll be asking about stress and releasing those results later in the summer.
Okay. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. How often do you do the surveys?
Every 3 to 5 years.
Every 3 to 5 mm-hmm. years. Okay. So the survey looked at the Greater Cincinnati region's uninsured rate. I think that was the first element that was released. Correct, Odell?
Yes.
Okay. And or the second?
It was the second. Our first one was general health.
General health. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was released when?
Beginning of May.
Beginning of May. What did that find?
So with general health, you know, it's hard to tell by phone what is someone's general health status. But there is one question we found that's pretty effective at getting a snapshot, and that's asking you to rate your own health. In general, is your health excellent? Is it very good, fair, or poor? And you can see that how you answer that question actually does connect to what your health is if we were to look at your medical records, for example. So what we found is really that number has not changed a lot since the last survey. It stayed pretty static. Around 50% of the region say they have excellent or very good health. Not just here in Cincinnati, though, not just here in our region, but across the country, this is a number that hasn't moved. The other piece that's very interesting is it's very different by income. So if you have a higher income, you have a better self-reported health. If you have lower income, you have worse self-reported health. So that may be an area, a lever we can look at in the future to try to improve this.
Mm-hmm. So what came next?
The insurance, uninsured rate.
Okay, mm-hmm. So the uninsured rate. So you looked at the region's uninsured rate. What's that percentage, and how does that compare to previous years?
We dropped down to about 10% of folks who were uninsured in our region among ages 18 to 64. So above that age, most people are in Medicare. That was a dramatic drop from where it had been the last time, and that's consistent with what we found elsewhere across the country.
Mm-hmm. Odell, that has to be a pretty encouraging number.
Well, it is, and certainly the Affordable Care Act has played an important role in that, and the extended Medicaid roles as well.
Yeah. What group saw the biggest drop in its uninsured rate?
Well, probably the biggest drop is certainly going to be people who are very poor and did not really have have health care. You know, when we talk about poor, it's such a broad stroke, because you have the working poor, people who go to work every day, work hard, just not paid very much, and could not afford health care. So when the Affordable Health Care Act came and the extended payment system was developed, this allowed more individuals to sign up, and it's really made a real difference. What we find in Cincinnati is that the group now who hasn't changed at all will be people who are undocumented, who live here in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Was this the first time you'd looked at the effect of the Affordable Care Act since you've been taking this survey?
It was. The last time we did it was in 2013, so before the Affordable Care Act.
So before the Act actually kicked in.
Exactly.
What about continuous coverage, mm-hmm. stability of coverage? Did that change any?
Right. So that's something we look at is you want to make sure you're continually covered over the last 12 months. If you're changing insurance all the time, you're going to have to change providers. You may not be able to get the health care that you need. Over the past 12 months, it was about 5% of the adults, which really hadn't changed since 2013.
Yeah. And one of the reasons you want continuous coverage, and one of the reasons that when you change insurance with your own company, you get a little letter saying that you had insurance, is to protect you against to ensure that you can get insurance and cover previous conditions get to be covered. Because if you don't have that, you break that coverage, an insurance company may charge you more for your current chronic medical problems.
Do you have any thoughts, Odell, on what happens as the healthcare law makes its way through the current legislature, what kind of impact that's going to have on this uninsured rate?
Well, it's going to have some impact. Depends on what happens. If you cut the Medicare and Medicaid, especially the Medicaid, you're going to really take away that opportunity for people who, let's say, who are going through the addiction to get treatment. This is the thing that's really opened the door for them. We got this epidemic, and if we can't get people into treatment, then we're really going to be in trouble.
Again, 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join the conversation, over all the years that you've been doing this survey, what kind of impact have you seen? What kind of effect has it had on the community?
Absolutely. So a lot of organizations use this survey. And I want to take this moment to make the point that we make this available to the community. We see this as a community resource. So we have organizations such as the United Way, hospitals, public health, health departments using the information either to track how things are changing over time, to identify new issues with emerging needs, or to identify who to target with their programs. So that's really the big issue that we've seen and how people have used it. We make it available through our website, and we make it all historically available, and we encourage individuals, organizations, and researchers to come and use it.
Well, what's that website address?
It's interactforhealth.org.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we should have a link to that as well at wvxu.org. The other element of the survey, you looked at smoking. Mm-hmm. And the most recent survey, what were the findings about the overall smoking rate in this region?
Well, I think the first thing is that in this region, we have a smoking rate that's higher than the rest of the country, the average of the rest of the country. I think the rate's around about 23%. Nationally, it's about 18%. But also, we've seen that there's been some reduction, but the actual areas, I'll let Susan get to give you the actual numbers, but there's certain areas, again, of populations of people based on income where we're not seeing the kind of gains we think we should see. And Susan can give some more.
And Susan, we'll get to that right after we have this break. So, because I want to talk about this pretty extensively. We will continue our conversation about the 2017 Greater Cincinnati Community Health Status Survey. You can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss the Community Health Survey are Interact for Health President and Chief Executive Officer Dr. Odell Owens and Research Officer Susan Sprigg. You can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Susan, go more in depth on these smoking numbers for our area.
Sure, absolutely. So we've seen some gains over time. We started off around 32% in 2002 for our region. We're down to 23%. That's a great change. That's
so we've
the right
had a,
direction.
We've had a decline. We're headed the
absolutely.
Right way.
Absolutely. That's the right direction.
But still higher than national.
Still higher than national. Okay. Nationally, it's about 18%. And the goal is by 2020 that the nation will be less than 12%. So we've got a ways to go there. But again, if you break it down by income, we can see that these gains have not been equally distributed. So if we start with adults who are earning below the level for the federal poverty level, which is around $24,000 for a family of four, among that group of adults, nearly 50% are current smokers, much higher than the overall rate for the region. And that number really has not changed very much since 2002 in the past 15 years. And then if you go a little bit higher than that, so between $24,000 to $48,000 for a family of four, nearly a third of those adults are smokers, again, really has not moved for the past 15 years. So where we've seen the movement is in that income group, the top income group, still not a lot, but above $48,000 for a family of four, where between 2002 and 2017, it went down from 32% to about 15%, so cut in half.
When you looked at this, Susan, did you also look at like each of the regions within our region is, in terms of percentages of smoking?
Absolutely. And there are big differences by region. So when you get down into Kentucky, it's 30% or more, so between 30, 34% in Kentucky. If you get to the more rural counties in Ohio and in our Indiana counties, you'll see that it's 27%, 26%. Also in the city of Cincinnati, it's a little higher. And then when you get to the suburbs, so Hamilton County suburbs, Butler, Claremont, and Warren, you'll see it's 17, 18%. It's lower.
And in fact, I saw Daddy 2 days ago, the smoking rates in Covington, Kentucky, is about 38%, mm-hmm. one of the highest is in Northern Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. But Northern Kentucky has the highest rate of all those,
right.
of all our areas.
Yes.
Okay. Did you track kids smoking? Did you look at that?
Not in the survey. We have a student drug use survey that tracks that, and we have that that comes out every year through Prevention First, which is a grantee we work with.
What have past surveys on kids smoking shown? How are we doing in that area?
We are still higher here than we are in the nation, but I don't know those numbers offhand.
Now, you asked the question in the survey, do you allow people to smoke in your home? That's a very interesting question. First, why did you ask it, and then what results did you get?
Well, the biggest reason we ask is about secondhand smoke, the impact of secondhand smoke. And I think historically people said, well, if I'm not in the room when they're doing that, then I'm not going to be impacted by it. However, we know that the smoke and the contents of the smoke can get on your clothes, on your couch, on your curtains, and still be able to impact you long after that person has left your premises. The actual numbers, I'm going to go back to Susan.
About 50% of current smokers smoked in their home, or allowed people to smoke in their home, and then only about 1 in 10 of previous or non-smokers allowed folks to smoke in their home. Overall, it was, I think, 2 in 10 overall.
So does this, too, vary by income levels?
There was not much. Oh, by income levels, yes, it does. It matches the smoking rate by matching by income levels.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think is going to be the key to reducing smoking in our area, getting these numbers even lower? They're heading in the right direction, but they're still high.
Well, you know, people have tried various things. You can first start looking at it from a policy standpoint by saying, okay, we're going to raise the cigarette tax. And indeed, if you look at across the river, Ohio has a much higher cigarette tax than Kentucky. Could that play a role if you raise the price of cigarettes? Does that slow people down? It certainly may shift people from two packs to maybe one pack. And there are some people who probably do give up because it does become extremely expensive. I think I walked in a gas station the other day and saw $7 a pack. Boy, that's $210 a month. That's a lot of money over
that's
the course
expensive,
of a year.
Yes.
So you have to meet people sometimes where they are. Simply to say, oh, if you smoke, you're going to get cancer. If you smoke, you can get... Some people, it just doesn't impact them. You got to try to find other ways. Certainly sometimes by going to adults and saying, hey, at least don't smoke in your home because of your children. You know, 10% of kids in Cincinnati public schools have asthma. So if they're in a home where they're smoking, either they're there when they're doing it, or even secondhand smoke, that's going to impact your children's health and those health of those kids with asthma. Yeah.
Another piece you can look at is smoke-free areas. So in Ohio, of course, we have smoke-free workplaces. We don't have such a law in Kentucky, although interestingly, one of our other surveys, our Kentucky Health Issues poll, came out saying that 71% of Kentuckians would favor such a smoke-free law for workplaces. So you don't see people smoking around you as frequently. And that really has a difference. If it's normal, if everyone around you or if many people around you are smoking, it becomes a little bit easier for you to do it also.
How much of an effect do kids, you were talking about kids with asthma, how much of an effect do kids have on convincing their parents not to smoke?
I think a lot of the gains were made by children. I think a lot of the smoking campaigns went down to elementary schools and tried to educate kids. And you know, kids can be a nag. They can go home and say, Dad, don't smoke. Come on, Dad. You know, we learned this in school. So kids can have an impact.
Again, 513-419-7100, if you'd like to join our conversation. Do you have any expectations, Susan, as to the next time you do this survey, what you might see in the area of smoking? Do you think it's going to keep going down, or do you have any feel for that?
That's what we're hoping for. Certainly, this is one of the areas where Interact for Health does some work. We try to encourage healthy use of substance use, including tobacco. So that's one of the pieces that we'll try to impact or continue to try to impact over the coming years.
Now, what are the largest changes, the biggest trends that you've seen since you've been tracking them through this survey?
Well, to me, I think the most significant piece for me is that you have not seen much of a change in the lowest income people. The people with the least amount of money do the most smoking. And that's just amazing when you think about why people are doing that.
And I'll say again, with the income, we did a report last time, 2013, on income and health. And we looked at and we broke down these different health issues. And not surprisingly, health and wealth are connected. So there was an improved health, improved health status, behaviors, outcomes as your income improved. There were a few areas where there was not much difference. I remember one of them that stands out for me is fruit and vegetable intake. Everyone in our region did pretty lousy on that in 2013. So we'll see this time when we get those results to see if there's been any change.
Okay. And when's that coming?
That'll come out, I believe it's in the late June. It's in late June.
Late June. Mm-hmm. Is there a finding or a trend that you just can't quite understand why this health problem is continuing?
Well, there is one that surprised me a little bit this time. And so it's been interesting to look into that research. We also track, do you have a usual and appropriate source of care? Do you have a doctor you go to regularly? We don't want you going to the emergency room, right? We want you to have a regular doctor help do preventive tests, get your care over time. We saw a decline in that on this survey from the last time. I believe it was 80-something down to 71%. Now, there is some research out there that says that we have a lot of people who have insurance for the first time, and they may not be settled into a preventive care routine. We don't know for sure that that's the reason. That's a direction to look in. These surveys are really a great tool to figure out where do we need to look more closely, what do we need to watch over time and see if it's a trend or a one-off.
513-419-7100, and Gloria joins us. Hi, Gloria.
Hi. My question is about mental illness and behavioral health disorders. What have you been able to find, or was that part of your survey as well? And I'm particularly interested in mental illnesses and behavioral health disorders in minority communities here in the Cincinnati area.
Do I know you, Gloria?
I think you do.
Well, then let's reverse. This woman is the expert on mental health. So she can actually, and I'm glad she brought that up, but she's very consistent, but she's the expert. So you ought to actually tell us, because you are the expert. But what do you have?
Well, I can tell you from the survey standpoint, we don't have a lot of questions about mental health specifically. We do have a question that asks if a doctor or other healthcare provider has ever diagnosed you with depression. I don't have those results yet for 2017. It was about 2 in 10 people, 1 in 5 people, when we asked in 2013, had been diagnosed with depression at some point. Not getting into serious mental illness, but getting to stress, we'll be asking some questions about, do you have ways to manage your stress? What is your stress level? And how does that compare with where you think a healthy stress level is, which are questions that the American Psychological Association also asks.
Yeah, that's a very important question to ask, because
right.
I don't think people fully realize the impact that stress can have on your life.
Mental and emotional health is completely linked to our physical health.
Gloria, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Did this year's survey, you mentioned the opioid heroin crisis that we have in our area, and it's all over the country, really. But did this year's survey include any information about the opioid crisis and drug addiction? Did you look at that?
This survey did not have questions about that. We do have questions about that on both our Ohio State poll, our Ohio State survey, and our Kentucky Health survey. We also are working within Interact for Health on other data collection and other data resources. So we're doing that, just not through the survey. It's a little tricky to ask in a survey. You don't want to ask someone if they are using or abusing opiates. We typically ask if you have friends or family who had trouble due to use or misuse of opiates.
513-419-7100. Harold in Cincinnati joins us. Good afternoon, Harold.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have one quick statement. As far as smoking in younger people, have you tried with women to say that it would prevent wrinkles in the future, and for young men that it will possibly prevent erectile dysfunction in the future?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, for a very long time, if you were to rank smokers by sex and gender, black women were at the bottom. And part of that was that they did not want that smoky breath, and the what they call the crow lines around the lines. But you know, that was old data. That was a different kind of generation. Things are a little more different. You know, when you try to sometimes giving people sort of the kind of threats doesn't work. When I was a coroner, people thought, oh, why don't you just bring people and show them a dead body and that's going to change their lives. Those things don't work because I brought in some real hardcore kids in to the coroner's office and they demanded to see dead people. And when I said no, they demanded to get into a body bag. So sometimes these things can have an impact and other times they don't.
So a negative message doesn't necessarily work. What would work better?
Well, I think you got to know your population and be able to put some type of real positive spin on it. You know, I think when you're dealing with mothers, you talk about the children. This is what you're doing. The impact is upon the kids, and that seems to resonate a lot better than telling that mother, if you smoke, you're going to have these problems. But on the other hand, we look at the high number of pregnant women who smoke. And if you people will say, wow, if you can't convince that person to say, well, you're pregnant and you're smoking, you're definitely putting a negative impact on that baby. It depends on a lot of things that are going on in their life.
Sounds like a lot of reducing smoking, though, is going to revolve around educating people.
Yes.
Getting the right messages out.
The right messages, yes.
Right messages and the right incentives.
We had a question from Jim. How do they normalize results with so many people these days using cell phones? People blocking callers, that kind of thing. How do you know?
Right.
That can mess with your results. How do you avoid that?
Absolutely. So we do this as a telephone survey with half landlines, half cell phones. I get questions about really, do these telephone surveys tell us what we need to know? And I will tell you that the research continues to show that it's an effective way to get information about health from people, that Gallup and Pew and these big organizations will do the research where they do the telephone poll, and then they do another way of collecting the data, and they compare those to make sure that they're close. Now, they also weight the results by demographics, so we make sure that it looks like our region. We're not getting all 63-year-old folks in Hamilton County suburbs, for example. We want it to match our region by race, by gender, by age, by geography, and by education level.
So again, what comes next?
So we'll be releasing obesity rates in our region, okay, and fruits and vegetables before the end of June. Then as we go into July, we'll be looking at things like delayed doctor's care. Did you have to use the money for something else and you had to choose not to go to the doctor in the past year? Have you been diagnosed with a chronic condition such as depression or diabetes, chronic heart disease, chronic lung disease? We'll be looking at the stress. We also look at some of the social determinants of health, some of the social factors we know have a big influence on health, like the health of your neighborhood. How is the housing in your neighborhood? How is your home? And do you have community support? We know that's important also.
Because we know here in Cincinnati that your health is more about your zip code than your genetic code. Those individuals who live in Fairmont, especially South Fairmont, have a life expectancy that is 20 years less than those who live in Mount Lookout, who have the highest life expectancy in Cincinnati.
Are we more so that way than other cities?
No. People find this across the country.
Okay.
Across the country is your zip code, not your genetic code.
Let's talk to Tommy. Hi, Tommy.
Hi, yeah. Just a question about smoking prevention and changing negative behaviors. Are there any approaches that maybe take a more angular approach such that they would try to get people interested in activities that are diametrically opposed to smoking, or to get them to fall in love with something that's diametrically opposed to smoking, such that they just can't do both. And so it's sort of a greater love for something else that would motivate someone to change their behavior in that area.
Oh, finding that positive message.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, it's interesting. We were having this conversation earlier that there is some information out there that sometimes cigarettes for some populations can be a replacement for other activities. I think you have said before, Dr. Owens, that you may not be going on a vacation this year. That may not be in the cards, but you can have a break from work or have a break when you smoke a cigarette. So what are that's part of the question is what role is it filling in your life? And then how do you address that and give them the opportunity to fill that with something else?
You know, you certainly have done that with athletes. You tell kids who want to be athletes or the soccer team, a track team, basketball team, whatever the sport, that, boy, if you smoke, that's going to impede your performance. So that has worked certainly in that group. But then what happens, oftentimes these kids are not in that sports. They're off for the summer. They may pick that smoking habit back up.
And it's challenging these days also with e-cigarettes. That's not something we asked about in this survey. We have asked that in our annual statewide surveys, and that is where a lot of
young. Is that something you might ask in a future community health survey?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Overall, Odell, are you optimistic about the direction our community's health is headed in?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Interact for Health is dedicated to that proposition that we're going to make this the healthiest region that we can.
Susan and Odell, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Interact for Health President and Chief Executive Officer Dr. Odell Owens and Research Officer Susan Sprigg. You can find a link to more information about the Community Health Survey at WVXU.org. Coming up, we're going to hear about boot camp for new dads, program and support groups for new fathers. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.